Blog Talk Radio. All too often these days, the factory whistle is falling silent in America. But there is a way to get American workers back to work. Start buying more American-made products. Now, a Michigan-based company is leading the way in this movement to strengthen our economy. It's called AmericanMadeProducts.com. AmericanMadeProducts.com is more than a way to purchase American-made products online quickly and securely. It's a way to get our economy moving in the right direction. Go online or call and speak to a live customer service representative. AmericanMadeProducts.com, a family company based on the belief in the American worker and the quality of American-made products. If you're an American manufacturer, big or small, and would like your products on our site, contact us. We add products daily. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your employer about AmericanMadeProducts.com. Visit, shop, and watch America grow. AmericanMadeProducts.com.
We are Forever Green Grow Supplies for all your indoor and outdoor growing needs. We carry a full line of many big-name vendors in stock. We also offer dried herbs, spices, and many blends of tea, with fresh herbs coming in February. Open to help you from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. Visit our website at forevergreengrow.com or like us on Facebook. Located in Vassar, Michigan at 340 South Main Street, right across from M&J Auto. We offer discreet delivery within 10 miles of Vassar. Stop in and see us soon or call us at 989-882-9177. We are looking forward to helping you. Thanks in advance, Forever Green.
Forever Green. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good.
And how are you doing?
Fighting a bout of the flu or something, I don't know.
Oh, you got a creeping crud.
Yeah, that's what it is, a creeping crud. And I don't know this afternoon, or this evening anyway. And I think we have Jeff on the line. Let me get Jeff up here. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm okay, how you doing?
Very good, very good, very good. You gentlemen doing fine. You had a great week. Jeff, you're on second. You still enjoying it?
Yeah. Doing, having a good time on that shift.
Very good. I do. I am a second shifter by heart. There's no doubt. I don't work that very good. And I enjoy. I am providing extra sleep. I not get enough on first, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I get a lot of more sleep on here. I feel a lot better. The pain has really gone up, disappeared a lot from working the line.
Well, very good.
So everything's working out fine for me.
All right. You got a question in the email. It says, Jeff, you work short. Are there any problems there, like there are at General Motors? If so, tell us some. This is from Paula Jackson, the state of Wyoming.
She wants to know if Ford's having the same problems as General Motors?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, we always talk about GM and the problems we have.
Not as bad as you guys, but we do have our own problems. I just was chatting with a friend of mine down in the Kansas City plant online, and he's telling me that they are going back to the free crew schedule in July or August.
Oh.
He is the guy who, he's the alternate safety rep on the night shift. And last summer, it was 107 degrees inside the plant, and he drove himself to the hospital, and they threatened to fire him. He was hospitalized for quite a while for a heat stroke.
And they threatened to fire him?
Yeah, they threatened to fire him, but they didn't.
Wow.
You know, Kansas City does get hot in the summertime.
Absolutely.
You know, we saw the other plants have the three crew schedule.
Right.
Dearborn, Michigan Assembly, I do expect my plant to get it probably next winter. All the car sales are down from what I read recently for the last 3 months. Not as bad as GM, I'll say.
No, not as bad, but you have your ups and downs, just like...
it's like any other business. We have our ups and downs. So, you know, cars don't sell well in the wintertime up here. That's a given. Everybody's paying their taxes and stuff like that. But
that's
in holidays. Let's see. They are trying... Alan Mulally didn't get as big a bonus as he thought he would get. They cut his bonus this time around. That was in the local paper recently.
Right.
I was kind of glad to see that happen. He doesn't deserve that much money. But it's still, he took home a hefty chunk of change. Ford, they're chipping away. They're making a lot of the people unhappy, especially with, you know, it's not just for, you know, the entire UAW membership. The AWS stuff is really a bad thing. That people talked about not paying dues because of the representation from Solidarity House. I've heard a lot of my close friends tell me over the last week or so that... They've had it with UAW, locally and nationally.
Right. I've heard this.
I'm pretty sure it's the same way throughout the Big Three. That's all I can tell you. They are the better one of the three right now in position. I did see where GM Ackerson was supposed to go to Washington and to talk to the congressional leaders about the success of General Motors.
Yeah.
And as Dick would say, how can they have success when they lose in market share since the bankruptcy?
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell he's going to say.
I don't either. We're going to get Dick on here. Maybe he can elaborate. Dick?
Yep.
I'm sure you heard that.
You're sounding a little... rough there, but I guess the question is Ackerson going to Washington?
Yes.
Well, it's tied in with what Obama did this week in New Orleans. The Environmental Protection Agency had originally, coming out of the bankruptcy, set $15 billion aside available to car companies to ask for grants to develop fuel-efficient vehicles. And General Motors put in for, I think, $10 billion of it. And they were going to give it to them, and there was some problems in Congress, so they didn't. And about a year later, the Environmental Protection Agency increased that $15 billion to $25 billion. Now, Jeff's company, Ford, who claims to have taken no money during the bailout period, took $5.2 billion of that to develop fuel-efficient cars. I would guess that's results in the hybrid focus. It doesn't really matter. But Fisker got some money. Tesla got some money. There were about three companies that got some money. Long story short, Ackerson is looking to get some free money again. They're asking for a $4 million tax abatement from Lansing this week to put this IT center in Lansing. So Ackerson started eyeing the $16.2 billion sitting there in the Environmental Protection Agency fund. But since our brilliant president decided to give all kinds of money to a company called Solyndra to make flat panels, an enormous amount of money, I think over $1 billion. They never made a flat panel. They never produced the one. And it was a big scandal in Washington at the end of last year. And so I guess there were some back-channel discussions because here's $16.2 billion, and Congress has decided they ain't giving none of that money to anybody at this point in time. And so Obama suddenly appears in New Orleans and says that he is going to divert $200 million a year from offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico into a fund to give to car companies to develop energy-efficient cars because of the new fuel standard. Akerson decides, with his brand-new Washington lobbyist, to go to Washington this week and hold a party. Nothing but a lobby affair. A one-day deal, invite all the people who will probably have anything to do with Akerson and GM getting their hands on some of that money that Obama is going to divert for 20 years from the tax revenues that would go to pay off the debit. Obama's going to divert this money from the taxes on the offshore oil companies into a new car fuel efficiency program because the $16.2 billion sitting in the Environmental Protection Agency fund, Congress is saying no, no, no. So he creates another fund. This is crazy. He's literally raiding the tax revenues of the country to create this new fund. And so Akerson is going to go and tell these people how wonderfully GM is doing, wine and dine them, and say, don't forget me, guys, we're going to, you know, if we happen to be putting in for some money. So that's a long way around, but telling you the whole context of why Akerson is going to Washington. May not be able to build a perfect car every time, but, boy, they can sure do these Machiavellian plants all the way to manipulating the President of the United States.
Oh, boy, damn. More money.
More money, free money, taxpayer dollars again. Your money, Don Crouch.
Oh, yeah. My money. Your money, everybody's money, Jesus.
That's right.
We do have a few emails, not that many, but a few.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, and it's from a retiree now living, I guess, worked at Flint Metal, which is a tank plant. He calls it a tank plant, so he must be an older worker. He's retired, now living in Montana. Yeah, he's been watching the UAW sell out its workers and retirees for years. Been listening to your show last week and learned that Chrysler worker was fired. Didn't come out right. Is this worker back to work yet? What is his options? Is there anything we can do to help him?
And you must be speaking into a speakerphone or a microphone, Don.
I'm always in a microphone.
Because you're getting really garbled.
Yeah, it's like you're almost too close to it sometimes.
What I'm getting so far is that he heard that a worker at Chrysler got fired. And is he back to work yet?
Yeah, is he back to work? And
what else does he want to know about that case?
What is his options? What is his options to get back to work if he isn't back to work, and how can we help him? And that's from Fred Larson, and from, like I said, tank plant worker now living in Montana.
Is that L-A-R-S-E-N or S-O-N?
S-O-N.
Okay. Well, Fred, no. The first question is no, he is not back to work. The day after he did a protest about alternative work schedules, which was on a Thursday, there were 12 workers, 12 other folks, and he was included in that group. He went into work the next day, and they notified him that it was going to be indefinitely suspended without pay, and they marched him out of the plant. About 3 days later, his plant chairman called him and said he was going to do his best to represent him, and the worker said that he believed the chairman was going to do his best to represent him. Keep in mind, this is an auto worker caravan protester. And so on that Saturday, about 8 days after he was fired, he got a registered letter at home converting his long-term disciplinary layoff to a discharge. Now, the original charges on him were twofold. Engaging with the media and or making statements that are or appear to be in conflict with the purposes of the corporation. No shop rule was included in any charge against him. No contractual violation was included in any charge against him. He was off the clock and on public property. He got that on Saturday. His chairman on Monday called him up and said he submitted a grievance for him. We don't know what the grievance was, but a statement was issued by the employee saying that he thinks the chairman's going to do a good job for him and that nobody out there should make any disparaging remarks about either the UAW or Chrysler Corporation, that if you want to talk about this case, that you should say you're disappointed about what happened to him, but no attacks on either the UAW or the corporation. And so far, the people who are in the group that he is involved in have not made any public statements. And we have, for all practical purposes, made no disparaging statements about the UAW. Now, you ask, what are his options? His options are to sit and wait on the pleasure of the outcome of the actions predicated on the grievance that the chairman wrote for him. That is his option. He has asked people not to, the Auto Caravan Group has asked people to call Chrysler and Solidarity House, but that was in the first couple days that he was suspended. And I don't know that anybody is doing anything overtly in terms of reaching out to Chrysler or the UAW. And if they do, the employee has asked that you should simply call and express your disappointment in what happened to him in a in a civil fashion.
Right.
Now, those are, as far as I know, the facts of the case. Now, in terms of what happened and any diagnosis or evaluation, in my personal opinion, after being a union representative for 29 years, or anybody else's that is on this program right now, I think we're all kind of respecting his wishes that we don't say anything to infuriate the either the International Union or the Chrysler Corporation and let the grievance run its course. One other thing that the chairman notified him that he posted, and what I'm doing is only saying what he said on the internet. He said that in the beginning that Chrysler had 7 days to take an action on his suspension. On the eighth day, it was converted to a discharge. On that same day, the chairman said that he wrote a grievance for him and that Chrysler had 7 days to answer the grievance. I'm going to say that that 7 days was up on Saturday, and maybe we'll hear something about the results of the grievance being written tomorrow sometime. So he has been out there now some in excess of 2 weeks.
2 weeks. All right.
Again, now when they converted the suspension to a discharge, the two reporters who were involved in writing the stories about this case, Brent Snavely at the Free Press and Bryce Hoffman at the News, talked to a woman named Terry something, who's the PR person for Chrysler. Initially, Terry was saying that the suspension was for, once again, engaging the media and making statements that were in conflict with or appeared to be in conflict with Chrysler Corporation. When the letter, the terms of the letter were put out there by, and apparently Bryce Hoffman from the News wrote an article on it, the first of the allegations, engaging the media, appears to have gone somewhere. And the only thing that's attributable to this woman, who was the PR person from Chrysler, is that he made statements that were in conflict with or appear to be in conflict with the purpose of the corporation.
All
so
right.
One can make a lot of assumptions, but
right.
Those are the facts. And right now, I guess we just all light candles, Fred.
Yeah.
And put our trust and faith in his bargaining unit chairman.
Yeah. Okay. And this goes to Jeff, Scott, and myself. Are we afraid of being fired like the man from Chrysler? And that's from Jim Barton in Texas. And I'll start with you, Scott.
No. No, I'm not.
No.
No.
Neither am I. So.
I have unalienable rights that have been endowed to me by my Creator. So as the Bill of Rights say, I would know a different way to do this whole situation. There's a process with us at General Motors where we'd start with the committee men. And, as Dick has walked us through the grievance procedures many a times, there are steps to take with this whole thing. And I wouldn't hesitate. So, as far as myself, I don't say anything that isn't true. I'm not malicious, I don't believe.
Whether you are or not doesn't matter.
You're right. You're right. We all have the freedom of free speech here.
Well, there's. Let me inject something here, Don, before you comment, okay, or Jeff. I have a very good friend who worked at Saturn. He now lives in Traverse City. He's retired. He ran a internet blog called Change Your Union. And he ran that blog for a number of years down at Spring Hill. And there were a lot of people looking at it around the country. He was naming names, name-calling, accusing blatantly. And this went on, and it went on for quite some time. And he was quite explicit in what he was saying. Now, I did not know this man at the time that I was following his blog. And then another friend of mine called me up and said, do you know the guy who's running the blog? I said, no. And he said, well, he's been fired. Would you call him up and talk to him and be of some help to him? Well, this was a guy probably like Don and Scott and Jeff. 25, 26, 27 years seniority. Always took care of himself, never had need to call a committee man, blah, blah, blah. Suddenly he finds himself home and without a job. And when I first talked to him, that is a significant shock to somebody who's never, ever been disciplined. and who's at the end of their working life. You're looking at losing your pension, your health care, all that stuff. And so when I first talked to him, he was quite upset. And what I said to him was, you were fired for running an internet blog. And he said, yes. I said, and how much are you going to charge General Motors and the UAW to rent your factory? Because that factory belongs to you now. Now, he had a hard time believing that. In the end, in 2 weeks, he was back to work. There are many, many law cases, my friend, about, as Scott just indicated, your right to free speech. And on the media, there have been many law cases where companies have tried to do things for people for using Facebook, running blogs. I don't know about Blog Talk Radio. But anybody who is on this program now has the right, as Scott said, to say anything and express any opinion you have about General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, the UAW, the federal government. You can cast any aspersions you want. The only recourse that those that are being asperred have is to take you to civil courts. If the company that you work for comes at you like they did my friend, and you go down to your state unemployment the day after you're fired, I would say there's a 99.9% chance that the state is going to find that you were not fired for a valid reason and give you your unemployment compensation. Now, because you win there does not necessarily mean you won the grievance, because those are all crazy people who did that to you. And they don't believe that they have to abide by the law. But my friend was back to work in about 2 or 2.5 weeks. He worked another couple of years, I believe, got his 30 years, and he left. So in terms of whether you are personally afraid, you can have those feelings. What I'm saying to you is there's also a freedom of speech and a freedom of the airwaves. The only laws that really apply to what we're doing might be extreme profanity or sexual kinds of things, as far as I know, in terms of your ability to put things on the airwaves. And now, having said that, I'll let you go ahead and I just wanted to put it in context before you made some comments so you'd all have an understanding of this, or anybody who's listening to this program. You don't have to be afraid to speak here.
No.
Now, I understand about people who are in plants who may not want to be identified for coming on the program because of implant retributions. There are also some recent law cases having to do with what's called implant bullying, either by the corporation, the union represents you, and or both of them. But that's another story. And having said that, that pretty much defines the field of play here for your answers. So I'll shut up now.
Thank you very much. That was good.
You're welcome.
And Jeff, how about you?
Two words. Hell no.
There you go.
My grandfather both started the UAW back in the day, and I'm here to continue their fight that they started years ago. But this time it just seems like we're fighting our own leadership or in the company, and he did. But I am not afraid. I have talked to many of my coworkers. I've educated them on things that they didn't know, and will continue to do so until the day they put me 6 feet under.
There you go.
And that's my story.
That's a good one. I like it. Yeah, we're on the same boat, same mindset. And I know there's people, I've talked to people at the truck plant that are afraid to call in, even if under a name that nobody would know. And they're just upset. They're afraid.
And we've addressed that a number of times on the program.
Many times, but
we're not including that. I mentioned that, and what I'm saying is,
right,
that's a different issue than the email you got is, aren't you afraid of being on this program?
Right.
As opposed to being in a plant and coming on a program. Those are two separate different things. Those are individual decisions that people make in the plant.
That's true.
They're very personal. I don't think there's any legal implication there. And anyway, nobody who comes on the program is probably in the plan anyway. But again, we've beat learned helplessness to death on this program.
Yeah, we have. That's true. Now, you three have a website on Facebook and a web page, or I don't even know what it's called on Facebook, but it's a great site. It's a great page for information. And why don't you tell us about it, Scott?
We're still under construction.
Well, wait a minute. Talk about the Facebook page, because Don is talking about Facebook, not the thing we've been working on the last 3 days.
That's what you've been doing, yeah.
Okay, what we've got is on Facebook. It's called Workers, Workplaces, and Unions. And we're trying to post some information on there. I personally post some things that are more positive and encouraging. I'd call them war chants. We put things on, information on there, and there will be a link on Facebook to later on to the website that we're working on right now under the same title. And you'll be able to Google that. Hopefully by Wednesday you'll be able to Google that, and that will pop up. And also on that site, there'll be a link to the UAW Whistle Factory Show. There'll be a link there to the Facebook place. There'll be a place to send us questions or emails. And also there'll be a format of how to actually communicate with us, too, hopefully in the future also. I mean, as far as like with emails and questions and posts that people want to put up and things like that, if they want to share to the web page.
And I have to say now that I want to publicly apologize to everybody who's heard me say for probably the last 5 weeks, please come to our Facebook site and talk to us, because you just can't do it right now. We're going through a bunch of machinations about open, close, whatever. Unfortunately, of the close to 2 million uploads that have happened on this program since we started, even this year, if the numbers are holding up, I have said repeatedly, all you have to do is go to Google and Google Workers, Workplaces, and Unions, and it'll bring you to the Facebook site. I was wrong in saying that, and you still can't do it. I checked it 15 minutes before I came on the program. I'm not sure how anybody who's listening out in the country or around the world can communicate to us on Facebook, but I want to apologize to anybody who took their time and tried to do that and said, what is that guy talking about? They're not here. Because the reality is we are not out there on the Internet. I made the false assumption of thinking that we were. We aren't. So we're trying. I'm still trying to understand that. I don't have an answer why we don't. Of all those uploads on the program, so far, we only have 76 people on that Facebook site, and most of those folks are friends of Jeff's from Ford. There's a couple people there from General Motors. I know we invited a couple folks from Chrysler. One of them is the gentleman that we were talking about earlier who had labor problems. And an old friend of mine came on the Facebook site a couple days ago, who is a retired university professor. I was hoping that he would come on the program and join us for some conversation tonight, but he's a very busy guy, and he's retired now, and he's a real social activist and has been for decades in Detroit. So I would guess weekend nights are pretty busy for him. But anyway, I'm not sure, to my satisfaction, how this dilemma gets solved. People are telling me everybody's got face back. I can tell you that is not so. There are probably more like me who really don't like Facebook at all, who don't have it. And you are really up the creek without a paddle. But even if you got Facebook, if you go to Google and you type in workers, workplaces and unions, you are going to get zero. You won't find us. We aren't there.
Right. So to clarify that, don't Google it. Go to Facebook and then look up workers, workplaces, and unions.
That's if you got a Facebook site. If you don't, forget it.
Exactly. So, and we are working on having a website up by this Wednesday. So next week, hopefully, we'll make that announcement that you'll be able to do that. But for right now, it's strictly going through Facebook.
Yeah, and I think Cinnamon's got the web, you know, for Facebook. You can just click on that, and hopefully that'll take you there. I enjoy that site. It's very informative for people that don't have the Detroit News, Free Press, Oakland Press, whatever.
Or the time to wander around on the Internet.
Absolutely. It's got everything. Good conversations, too. Good comments.
Yes, well, there is.
I'm anxious to see your website, and hopefully you'll get it up soon, up and running, and then you can Google the website.
Yes. That's the plan. But we're working on it. We'll get it there.
Oh, yeah.
And some technical difficulties today, but we're working on it. You got to enjoy the modern technology, right?
Well, no, I don't. So I'm with Dick on this. I'm surprised I can even get this show up and running. So there.
Yeah, they did make changes to Blog Talk Radio, didn't they?
I didn't know that because I just go to the switchboard. But yeah, after everybody said, "Boy, it's changed," and I did. I don't like it. I don't like new.
Right. Well, I mean, I understand that all changes is taking you out of your comfort zone. You know, some people do better with other things than
Absolutely.
Some people. But I have no idea as far as trying to do this. I was trying to do it all by myself, and we've had some help from a mutual friend of me and Dick and I. And he said it's going to take a couple days. I got all the groundwork in there, the basement's there. He said it takes a couple days for the web crawling to happen, and it'll start popping up on Google. But
right.
So I got to wait until it gets going a little bit before we can look for it. But we'll get there.
No, go ahead.
Oh, well, we had, like I said, we put the radio show on there. That's the first one we put up there. Then there's a separate page that you'll be able to make some comments if you want to post some things. And we have to edit that, of course, and you have to work on that. I guess whenever you put up a new web page, you have to kind of tweak it and adjust it to, you know, get it to run the way you want it to run. And then there'll be
work in progress.
Yeah, it's definitely a work in progress. I was ready to pull my hair out earlier today.
I mean, all the time. I mean, you got to keep, you know, you keep changing things.
Yeah. And until you get it set up the way you need it, every time somebody makes a comment or a post on it, you got to go back in and
redo it because I guess it will change the status.
Now, do you make sure you have a counter? You can get a counter and put on there and make, see how many people are hitting the site.
Right. And Google did offer that. That is an option I chose. I decided to go through Google to try everything. But there's all free. The initial setup was pretty easy, but it takes some time. And
it takes time.
You said, you gotta work with it.
Oh yeah.
You know, you gotta constantly monitor it when you first get it up, and there's a lot of changes that you wanna make to it to get it running smooth. It's not an easy job, I guess. I mean, I guess it could be if you wanted to hire somebody to build you one, you know. Because if somebody knew what they were doing, I'm sure they could do it in probably a day or less.
Oh, I don't even think it would take that much.
But we're
not familiar with, you know, and we haven't really talked about, you know, the website is not going to be a blog site.
No,
it's going to be like going to a library.
Right.
If you work for GM, Ford, Chrysler, or other unions, there'll be files you can go to there. Hopefully, we'll get people to send us their local agreement, their local union bylaws. We should have the Constitution of the Union on there, much like if you look at the UAW's website, we're going to kind of have those files, just like you can go to the UAW website and go to Ford, GM, or Chrysler departments. Or any of the other departments. The other thing, Don made a good point, Scott. We definitely want the counter. We don't want it hidden. We want it open, where when you open it up, you can see how many hits there have been to the site.
Oh, well, it's there.
And so there's the whole business. Why I don't like Facebook is, yes, anything anybody puts on there goes on, but it just goes on in chronological order. And people tell me, well, you can search Facebook, Dick. I can imagine the nightmare that must be. But the point I'm making is, if you're a GM person and you want to know what's going on in GM, we will make our best effort to, under GM, have hopefully we'll list all the locals. That information is available on the website. We'll have... again, the Constitution will have what's going on with General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, and what's going on with the industry, such as it looks like the hapless workers at Volkswagen in Chattanooga are to become Saturn II. It looks like Mr. King and Volkswagen are making a deal to go in there, and I can't read anywhere where the workers are going to have a vote on it. They found a hole in the law here. They're saying that Volkswagen is interested in talking with Mr. King about putting a works council in place. And the reason that they're not doing an organizing drive is because what they want to do with workers might have possible violations of the law. Well, we went through that back during the Labor Management Relations Act days, and there's a very famous lawsuit named the Electromation case, where people who had unions decided to do joint programs. And they started doing things that joint programs were not supposed to be doing. And so Volkswagen and the UAW have found a way to concoct a story now, preying on the ignorance of everybody out there who doesn't understand anything. Volkswagen is saying, well, you know, we're supposed to have a works council wherever we are in the world. Well, then you do that with IG Mattel. And that would be the union in Volkswagen. Instead, they're saying they're going to have a works council with the UAW. This is not Germany. Works councils are mandated by law in Germany, and they're industry-wide. But they're taking the term works council and plugging in that around and behind the National Labor Relations Act organizing process to say they're talking with the UAW to put a works council in place. But nowhere in the two articles that I read are they saying they're going to offer a referendum vote to the people. Because if the UAW is going to walk in that plant and there's not going to be an election, that is really interesting.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say about that.
There's not enough information, but there's enough out there. If one understands about works councils and the law in Germany and the labor laws in America, and we know about that, guys, how does Bob King get in there wrapped in a blanket called a works council? How does the UAW get to come into a plant wrapped in a blanket called a works council? Will there be a vote? Is anybody even asking the workers if they want the UAW? And Volkswagen is kind of intimating, well, we really can't have a works council without a union. That is not true. Works councils don't apply in America. Not in terms of as they apply under statutory requirements in Germany. And I can't imagine what these two men, Volkswagen and the UAW, got into a closet and what this baby looks like. Call the Works Council in the United States of America with the UAW. So we'll just have to let nature take its course and let the baby come out so we can understand what it is they've created. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
This is really outside the box stuff. Outside the National Labor Relations Act, too, by the way, as far as I can determine. We can get into a plant. Now, if all this works council discussion is a cover story, a phony story, where Bob King uses that around and behind the National Labor Relations organizing process to get Volkswagen to sign a letter of agreement with them and simply calling it a works council, and using the term works council to avert having to have a vote, boy, that's a two-headed baby if I ever heard of one. However, let us not diminish the creativity of our beloved UAW president, Bob King. Everything but what he's supposed to be doing.
Oh, you're so right. Oh, my God. Okay,
what else you got?
Here's a question. If your plant manager at Flint has the same manager at Malfab plant, why does a team leader at Flint Truck get less pay? I have worked at both plants and can tell you it's so much easier at the Fab plant than the truck plant. Just wondering why not equal Rose Pearson, and she's in Florida. And I guess she's a retiree from Florida.
Can't get her there, can they? So she's blowing a whistle on the whistleblower show. Come get me.
Come and get me.
Have a daiquiri.
We'll feed you to the sharks.
She makes a good point. And I think we've talked about that on this program a little bit, that there's a disparity of pay between Metal Fab and Flint Truck. They do have the same plant manager. I think we asked Jeff about that. I think Ford has standardized leader pay throughout the corporation, if I remember Jeff telling me that. Is that true, Jeff?
That's correct.
So a leader is a leader anywhere you are in Ford, and that's standardized in their national agreement. General Motors is fundamentally silent about leader pay in the national agreement. And so they work their magic. And the thing that Rose does not talk about, and I have a friend who is a team leader at Metal Fab, is they have something called a hard leader and a soft leader over there. And so a team will have two leaders, a hard leader and a soft leader. The hard leader runs the job. The soft leader does the whiteboard and all the paperwork stuff.
Oh, okay.
They still make more money than the leaders at, I think they get a dollar. I think that's the rate. And Rose didn't tell us what a leader gets at Metal Fab. But I think they get a dollar over there. But that's not the point. I mean, there's no excuse for the UAW allowing for any job classification to be paid a different rate of pay from plant to plant or state to state. We did all that. We did all that 40 years ago in the UAW, where we had language in the national agreement called wage equalization. And I think I've told this story on this program. During national negotiations, the UAW would sit down with a corporation and negotiate an amount of money. Just for the sake of the argument, let's say $1 million. And then there would be a couple of guys on the international staff and a couple of guys in the corporation. They would scour the, and those of you that were around, remember the wage agreement part of your local agreements. They were 5 to 10 pages long. And if you can remember far enough back, you had a starting wage, a midpoint wage, and then the top wage. And you got the top wage after 90 days. And you had a lot of classifications in the plants. And they were completely justified given the technology that existed at the time.
Right.
Especially if you were in a manufacturing plant. It wasn't so bad in assembly plants. But if you were in a heavy manufacturing plant like I was at the gear and axle, where we made gears, axles, ring gears, pinion gears, rear ends, and we did the machining. We did we machined the castings. You had all kinds of machines. Well, what they were doing then is take that $1 million, and two guys from the union would get together, scour the local agreements. They'd look at the amount of money they have and say, okay, during the course of this contract, let's pick this classification. It's got the widest dispersion of wages. Let's bring them together on one wage. Then they'd have to go to the corporation and sit down with whoever their counterparts were and see if the corporation had anything they were interested in doing wage equalization on. And they would do that during the life of the contract so that finally, I can't remember the year it was, but we finally accomplished it, that there was no difference in pay in a given classification across the corporation. And now here these people go with this leader thing in GM, and we suddenly find we have, given the fact that nobody's had a pay raise in 10 years, and wage rates are almost something nobody even knows how to talk about anymore, and we find this disparagement of wages, and nobody seems to want to raise the issue. And nobody, the international union seems more than happy with this kind of difference in pay. And unfortunately, the Metal Fab plant and your plant are kind of a unique deal because you got the same plant manager. And she's sitting there saying, hell yeah, I'll pay the leaders more at Metal Fab. Hell, I'll give you two leaders and a team at Metal Fab. And I know how hard Scott works as a team leader. And I know the kind of responsibility he's got, and probably all the other team leaders. I can't speak to them, Don, because I don't know any other team leaders in your plant. But I'm sure they all have quite a bit of responsibility.
Yes, they do.
And they're all making a big chunk of a dollar less per hour than, well, a piece of a dollar an hour, a considerable piece,
mm-hmm.
less than the guys at Metal Fab. And gals.
Now, Jeff, do you have a hard leader and soft leader?
No, we just have a team leader.
Just a team leader?
Yep.
And don't forget, Don. Oh, I'm sorry, but Ford, in their highlights, in their contract, has said they're going to take their whole 40,000-plus workforce and break that whole workforce down into 10-man teams. They're saying that outright in their contract. It's in their highlights.
So 1 liter per 10, okay.
Yeah, we just got our teams divided up in my area Friday. There's three teams in my area. So I don't know if the rest of the plant is finished yet, but my unit, Prairie, is done as far as what jobs go with what teams.
Are they doing it on a 10-man team basis, Jeff?
Some have that. Some have a little less.
Okay, because they say clearly in highlights they're going to go with 10-man teams.
Right. For some reason, the day shift has six more people than the night shift. And the guys were really upset over that on Friday night. So they're going to investigate it. So I'll find out more on tomorrow night when I get in what exactly is going on.
Well, there's always been more guys on days in skill trades and even in production, because that's where all the big shots are.
Right.
And
right.
They want to make sure there's enough people there in case something breaks and they're not in a plant when it does.
Right.
But second shift has always been a little sparser with people. I know in skill trades that's always been the case in my experience.
And production.
Right.
That's not unique to this contract.
Right, not unique.
But they did say 10-man teams in their highlights.
Yes,
that's
did.
Why I'm kind of harping on it. I didn't tell
yes,
them to
did.
Put that in the highlights.
No, it sure did. They said 10-man teams.
All right. Well, we got some Jack Nelson from Kentucky wrote in that he's toured four GM assembly plants and one Ford assembly plant. And he was one of the people that said those, you know, we were overpaid and complained about our benefits and everything. He said, "I just want you to know that I have woken up. I didn't see people sitting, sleeping, reading the newspaper, etc. I apologize to each plant worker. I believed everything I heard on TV. Thank you for all the hard work you do, and I love my GMC truck, Jack Nelson, Kentucky." Well, thank you, sir. You're right. Can't believe everything you hear on.
Are there any more questions, Don?
No, that was it.
I want to say something about Ford's pension plan.
Absolutely.
Ford, and I've said this on the program before, I feel is a lot more responsible, mature, and adult automobile company than General Motors and Chrysler. They have announced that they have made public their pension funding numbers. And they published a 62-page PowerPoint presentation that they use at something called the Ford Training Institute for Salaried People in Finance, I think, on how pension plans work, how the funding works. And Ford is making a serious effort. Unlike General Motors that said, "We ain't not putting any money in the pension plan for 5 years, we're fine." Ford put about $5 billion, I think, in last year. And I'm just going to talk off the top of my head. I'm not going to scour through this binder I printed out. But they put money in their pension plan, and they still wound up $18.5 billion underfunded because the money going out has exceeded the money coming in. And so Ford has announced in a newspaper article in the news that they are going to convert as much as 80% of their pension investments now into fixed income returns. to eliminate the volatility of their investment returns. And they gave the numbers out there, and they're saying they're probably going to put some more money in this year. But the point I want to make is not so much the numbers. If you go to Detroit News, there's an article on Auto Insider there, Jeff. Maybe you can find that thing and put it on the Facebook site.
All right.
And they're taking a public, very responsible, mature approach. They're not ranting and raving like Mr. Gursky and Mr. King about de-risking the pension plan. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. They're saying we are very pragmatically going to go about bringing our money going out. Well, of course, they can do this now because there were two approaches when the annuity talk was going on. The one thing that happened in Ford, GM, and Chrysler is our union froze the pension plans. And so they now know what their ultimate fixed costs are going to be. And so now they can put a program in place to start changing their investment philosophy. But what's interesting is they put their financial training manual out there. It's on the damn internet. They had a conference call, gave it to reporters, gave it to Reuters, and they said, this is what we're doing. Here are the numbers involved. I mean, my God, the Renaissance Center would fall down if they told Dan Akerson he had to do that, GM. I'm convinced of it. They'd all get up on the top of the building and jump off. Probably take a lot of UAW folks with them. Because this nonsense where General Motors is saying we're not having to put any money in our pension plan for 5 years, there is nothing in our society that you can project out for 5 years. I think we all will agree to that.
Right.
Things are way too volatile and unstable, and there's too much BS going on in Washington now with this nonsense all day on the TV. But I just wanted to make the point, and I'm sure Jeff will put that up on a website. It's just a newspaper article, but it gives you the fundamental numbers that Ford professes. Here's what's happened, and here's what we are doing to deal with it. We have never had that kind of transparency with pension funds and GM in my lifetime. And so I just wanted to bring that up about the pensions.
Speaking of nonsense in Washington, I wonder if Mr. King is going to get a food taster also.
A food taster?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you mean a food taster? Now what's going on?
Our commander-in-chief now feels that part of his Caesar mentality is coming out, and he now believes he needs a food taster to taste his food to make sure it's not been poisoned before it's fed to him.
And he didn't.
You mean when he's traveling?
No, all the time now.
In the White House?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm afraid we all better start digging bomb shelters and get ready to move into them. I mean, if this crazy person thinks he needs a food taster in the White House,
yeah.
We all better go out and buy some 50 caliber Barrett rifles. If it's that bad. Where did you see that?
Oh, that's all over.
Yeah, it's been all over the internet now.
They had a meeting with some of the Republicans, and he couldn't eat because he didn't have his official taste tester with him. So he didn't eat. The rest of the people ate.
please eat the dates. I have some
special
dates.
He met with the
here.
Republicans, like in some a hotel or something?
I'm not sure exactly where they were. They were meeting about the budget, and I don't know if they're in the White House or not, and I wouldn't assume they were, but it was announced that he's not going to eat nothing now without a taste tester.
Yeah.
Well, that speaks highly of the Homeland Security program, doesn't it?
Sure.
That's the biggest incinerator of our tax dollars that was ever created by the federal government. A food taster, eh?
Yeah.
Shades of the Borgias.
Yeah.
Good Lord. 2013, March. President of the United States needs a food taster in the White House.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you just see him going to the Senate dining room and bringing his food taster along? I mean, what does that look like? Some guy, does he sit at the table and eat with him? Does he suddenly appear when Obama's soup is delivered and he takes a silver spoon out and tastes the food and they wait 10 seconds to see if he dies and then Obama eats? How does that work?
I don't know. Like I said, I wonder if Mr. King will follow suit. He has just as many people upset with him as the president does.
Well, I don't know about King, but I mean, I think this is just beyond comprehension.
Hey, he could literally say, "Hey, Joe, come here, take a sip of this."
Yeah, but I mean, there's all kinds of poisons, for crying out loud.
Absolutely, there is.
I mean, some poisons might take an hour. You know, some may kill you instantly. I guess the assumption there is that if anybody wants at him, they're going to give him something that's going to act within seconds.
I don't know.
They also got long-term. Unless the guy's got a chemical analysis kit, like how they test drugs, where they squirt something on a piece of paper and it turns blue or something.
Sure, sure.
So the food tester's got some kind of chemistry set with him, and whatever Obama's going to eat, they squirt something on it. If it don't turn color, he can eat it. I know that, I mean, what I'm saying is nowhere near as insane as what you're telling me.
But it's true.
Oh, all right. Okay. So we've had the humor section for the show for tonight, I guess. Food tester.
Thanks for bringing that up, Scott. I didn't know how to maneuver that in.
not a problem.
Yeah,
oh, God.
I was just thinking, you know, the similarities that King could, you know, say, "Hey, Joe, come here and take a sip of this." Same thing as...
Glenn Dick down and...
I would think they'd probably do it chemically now, Scott. I would think that there's probably a small number of known things that could be used, and you could almost do it like a diabetic test. You could drop something on it, and take a swab of the piece of paper, drop something on it, and probably know. I mean, it's that sophisticated. Heck, you can almost do that with these new readers now.
Right.
Infrared readers or something to do a chemical analysis. But, I mean, however, it's still, to me, quite humorous. And, well, you're right. Maybe we should take a collection up so Bob King can have a food tester. I don't know.
Oh, hell no.
How come he's been so quiet lately, anyway? Oh, I know. He surfaced with this Volkswagen thing. That's why he's been so quiet. Listen, this Volkswagen thing is going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. That's why he's been so quiet.
That could be why.
That's right.
I'm just wondering how the people in Volkswagen's going to feel about that.
Well, will they get the vote on it? I mean,
I'm just being my old paranoid self.
I didn't see anything in the two articles I read that said the people will vote on having a works council. And this is not Germany. They're not mandated here. Now, Volkswagen is under a legal obligation. The way the German law is written, anywhere that Volkswagen builds a plant anywhere in the world, they have to have a works council. And when King was talking about trying to initially organize the Volkswagen people, Don, Volkswagen made it very clear they didn't necessarily have to have a works council, a union to have a works council, and that they had made certain arrangements with their workforce to comply with the German law in Chattanooga, that they had already done that. And when King was talking, until King totally alienated himself from the German unions, and they were going to come over that October and help him organize in the plant, they weren't talking about works council. They were talking about organizing. And now all of a sudden we're talking about this, and I just see a hybrid of that outside the National Labor Relations Act kind of sneak in the back door unionism that he's been trying to get companies to buy into, citing his letter of agreement, which is a variation on a theme of what we did at Saturn. Now we negotiated a contract and wanted anybody to vote on it.
Now in the chat room, the old man, he would like to know, how would a work council be bargained for employees that haven't voted on representation?
Well, see, old man is a pseudonym, I take it?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Well, works councils don't apply here in America. Volkswagen has to have, they call them works councils, and they're defined in Germany. But they're supposed to have, works councils are organizations of workers where they have a works council, say a Chattanooga works council, and they would meet with men. It's much like your key four is in your plant, the president, chairman, plant manager, and personnel director who meet on a regular basis. It's much like that. Now, there are some, during the Labor Management Relations Act hearings when they were passing the act, there was this case, Electromation, and there was a case at DuPont in New Jersey where companies had brought people together. And again, if you look at the National Labor Relations Act, there are certain things as proscribed in labor agreements that are solely the responsibility of management. And as Scott's favorite number, paragraph 8. I don't know what the number is in Ford. So these companies were trying to tell the courts that they had, were just meeting with workers on health and safety matters. It's pretty difficult to isolate health and safety from day-to-day work. Keeping in mind the National Labor Relations Act explicitly says that unions have two functions, to negotiate wages and working conditions. Now that's codified in the law. That's what unions do. As far as the National Labor Relations Act is concerned. Now, companies under paragraph 8 have the sole responsibility determining the products to be manufactured, location and method as a means of manufacture, and to have the sole responsibility for the efficiency and discipline of employees. Now, anything that can be proscribed to those sole rights of the corporation, management can't have a joint committee to do in our society. Okay? Now, you have in your plant, you have what's the name of it, Scott? All the committeemen are in one. A manpower committee.
Yes.
And the manpower committee has, as a member, the district committee man. And that district committee man sits, that district committee man, as far as I know, sits in when people want shift preference and either promotions or lateral moves if they're applying for another job. And somebody correct me if I'm wrong. If not on this program, call in and beat the hell out of me next week about this. But that committee man sitting there, we have paragraph 63A1 and 63A2 in our national agreement in GM. One is for promotions and one is for lateral moves. Now, paragraph 63 says, where merit capacity and ability are equal, seniority shall be the criteria for either a promotion or a lateral move. Lateral move mean, you know, I want to go from this department to that department in the same classification, or, you know, I want to go to first shift or second shift. There's no increase in pay. Well, the union's historical position has been merit capacity and ability of all dues-paying members. They all pay the same dues. They're all equally capable, loyal, hardworking, dedicated employees at GM, so you'll go by their seniority. What this manpower committee does is it doesn't change the language under paragraph 63A1 or 2, but it's got some letters in the back that create the manpower committee. And what essentially happens is that we don't know what position that committee man is taking on the business that comes before the manpower committee. First, is he adversarial? Second, where it comes to promotions or moves, is he adhering to the fact that seniority shall be the criteria, or now do you have a union person involved in saying, well, let's look at merit capacity and ability, and I'm sorry, Scott, there's a guy who's better able to do this job than you, so you're not going to get it even though you have more seniority than he does. So if somebody's got any examples of that, please call in. What's that committee man doing on something called a manpower committee? Paragraph 8 is explicit. It is the sole responsibility of management to determine the efficiency and discipline of employees. That's manpower. And I don't expect a response from anybody in 598 on this program right now. I'm just throwing it out there to the internet. So the Electromation case had to do with that when they were writing that law. Now, the works councils in Germany, under the law, works councils get involved in these things. It's co-management. That's what works councils are about, co-managing. We have joint programs. But you have to keep something in mind. I don't care what language is ascribed to any joint activity in the contract. None of that mitigates the language in paragraph 8. Not one bit. So it's the parent, the management of paragraph 8, who may deign to enter into discussions with the union on something. But ultimately, like the pension plan, where there is a joint union management committee of three and three people, and they discuss the pension plan, you can find all that out in Attachment A of the new agreement. But the way that works is management will share certain information with the three union guys. They will say, here's what we're proposing to do on the pension plan. They will entertain discussions with the three union guys. And by the way, when they formally meet, they hire a third-party arbitrator for those meetings. But when the discussions are over, management says, okay, fine, we've heard what you got to say. Now we're going to leave the room and go into our room next door and decide what we're going to do. That's all spelled out in the contract. So, but the manpower committee has the committee man there, and they very explicitly put these district committee men in these manpower committees in each district. There's a lot more insidious reason for that committee man being there than not. So works councils, though, codified in the laws of Germany, can deal with those things that are defined in paragraph 8. That's what works councils, and supervisory committees do. But that's the law in Germany. And there are in that same law, management still has the ultimate decision, but there's a little more co-management. Like when I was at Saturn, and I was a member of the Strategic Action Council, and in a sense I was acting as a corporate vice president down there, and every Monday morning we would meet the president, the vice president of manufacturing, the vice president of industrial relations, the president of the company, the controller, the vice president of marketing, the vice president of purchasing. And we would have the heads of the five parts of the plant come in and say, this is how we did last week, this is what we're doing this week, here's how we exceeded what we're supposed to do, here's where the shortfall is. And once we'd hear those presentations, then we would decide how to rectify the shortfalls and how to go forward in a week. And we had a full say in that in the union, because there was no management's rights clause in the Saturn agreement. And so in that contract, and at the time, 17 others around the country, the union could be involved in the decisions of Paragraph 8 without violating the National Labor Relations Act, because contained in the National Labor Relations Act is explicit language that you can't do that. And if you do, you stand to risk being decertified as a union because you're acting like management. So what does this mean now that they're doing down in Chattanooga, given the National Labor Relations Act? They want to do something called a Works Council? Well, a Works Council would be here in name only, and it would have to still comply with the National Labor Relations Act. Although we have an article that we put on our Facebook site, written by an attorney at the Michigan State University Law School, and I don't know if I have that where I can lay my hands on it. I wanted to quote the title. I guess I misplaced
it. Interest.
A divided interest, what though? The name of the article is A Divided Interest, and it goes on to say something else, but it refers to the UAW because the article is about the UAW. And what this guy is saying in these 24, 27 pages is that the union is currently acting illegally in its relationships with Ford, GM, and Chrysler under the National Labor Relations Act.
Okay, I got it. A divided interest, the UAW's current contradiction of the National Labor Relations Act adversarial model.
Okay, so in taking stock to fund the VEBA, we are in contradiction of the National Labor Relations Act that says that unions negotiate wages and working conditions with corporations, and they maintain an adversarial relationship in so doing that. Because the only thing that gives a balance of power across the negotiating table is if the unions remain adversarial. But by the very act of taking this stock to fund the VEBA, we no longer maintain our adversarial relationship, because we are a party of interest in the success of the corporation legally. And the reason that happened is it was against the law, ERISA, for companies to fund employee benefits with company stock. The Big Three and Ron Gettelfinger went to Washington, and they got the government to give them a rules exception. And the rule was that it is a prohibited illegal activity, I'm quoting the law, to fund employee benefits with company stock. That came to pass because of the Enron debacle. They got the rules exemption, and only then did the companies, in particular GM, go forward with the VEBA. Because there's language in the 2005 VEBA in the 2005 agreement that says that General Motors reserves the right to pull out of this VIVA at any time pending certain rules changes being obtained. Well, we didn't know what that meant then. We do now.
We do now.
And that was to do something that is a prohibited illegal activity under a federal law, that being taking company stock to fund employee benefits. Ford has said, again, a more mature, grown-up company, Ford realizes this. I think I read somewhere here in the last 4 or 5 months where Ford is going to make an effort to buy back all of its stock in the VIVA from the UAW. They don't want to be involved in the nature of that relationship with a union. So, having said all that stuff now, back to Volkswagen, Works Council cannot be defined as it functions in Europe. But then again, Bob King's got no problem, nor Gettelfinger, having this divided interest in being in conflict with the National Labor Relations Act, and nobody in government seems to be bothered by it. I wish I could go out and violate laws like that and not go to jail. I don't know how they, you know. It's kind of like the too-big-to-fail bank thing that this kind of operates under. But I think that we have gone beyond the pale with this divided interest now in terms of some of the things that we are doing, such as I will negotiate no contract with one of the companies that puts the other two at a competitive disadvantage. I just can't conceive a union leader saying that. But it's the same guy who's got stock in all three companies. So the question that goes begging is, who's representing the workers in the plants now? If he's busy worrying about the success of the company, and we have an hourly worker now who's been out of work for over 2 weeks for engaging the media and or saying things that are in conflict with or appear to be in conflict with the interests of the corporation, what you have here is a public relations campaign that flies in the face of the National Labor Relations Act, and a guy is getting disciplined for it. How's that for a conspiracy theory, Crouch?
That's it right there. You got it.
No more questions, eh?
Scott, Jeff?
Any more?
No,
I'm good. Nothing in the chat room, or?
I'm not in the chat room right at the moment. I'm on your site.
Nothing on emails?
No, that was the only emails we got.
Huh, interesting. Well, I want to get that pension thing out there. I mean, there's other things that are going on, but I think that's probably in terms of workers. Jeff, I wanted to ask you, when you say the three crew thing, you're talking about alternative work schedules or straight 3 8-hour shifts?
The alternative work schedule.
Okay. We got to see where that's going to go. I mean, these two reporters took up for that guy who was protesting on their work schedules, but I think that the papers are complicit with the union and the corporation in this town, because Truth About Cars put an article in about this discharge, and we have that up on the Facebook site. Right, Jeff?
Yes, we do.
And they said that they were really surprised at Truth About Cars, that these two hometown papers would even write stories about this.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what we're getting to be bashful about. I mean, we look at what they're doing to us now.
Well, what's left to do?
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about. It's been bugging me because my friend, Michael, is making a presentation in Detroit on the 24th. And it kind of talks about a post-corporative world. And I talked to him, and I said, we're talking about redistribution of wealth, I take it. And there's been a lot of stuff out there. We got stuff on the Facebook site about it, this whole business. But what I wanted to talk about, and I think I talked with Jeff about this a couple weeks ago, if the companies have collectively generated $24 billion in profits since the bankruptcy, we're paying Dan Akerson more money than the bankruptcy court judge said he's supposed to because Obama and Geithner want to give it to him. We're paying Mr. Mullally pretty good money. Marchione Chrysler is making a lot of money, only they're paying him out of fiat, and we'll never know how much that is. But the point is that all three of the companies are profitable. All three, Chrysler and GM had to submit a five-year plan to the bankruptcy court. Ford did not. But Ford has been pretty transparent where they're at. Ford said, we borrowed $18 billion. We mortgaged the glass house, and we're on our way to maybe getting that money paid back. So all three of the companies are fundamentally in a very low debt position. They can't be crybabies about their pension obligations. I mean, when they froze the pension plans at 30 years and no more additional years, you have no idea how much money that's worth to them. Beside the fact that the pension rates haven't gone up since, 2007? We haven't got to wages yet. They took $700 a year away from every Ford, GM, and Chrysler retiree, and that money alone says, you ain't got nothing to talk about. Akerson says there's so much money in the pension plan, we have to put any money in for 5 years. Okay, taking all that, and we know there's a lot of BS around anything anybody says, I don't see why Mr. King can't turn around as a lame duck candidate and reopen the contracts next year. He's going to have to do that anyway, because he's got to reopen the contract and do, I guess, what the teachers are doing, negotiate a 10-year contract so he keeps getting his dues collected. So hang on to your seatbelts, guys. I think he's going to be looking for a hell of a lot more than a 4-year agreement when he does negotiate the contract again. But I don't see why. My more radical side says, open it now. Let's have some clawbacks here. Let's reinstitute the notion of a negotiated wage increase. Hell, I don't care if they give you all a dime. Let's renegotiate the contract and give everybody a flat 10-cent basic pay raise. Let's get that back into the contract. Now, the labor economists could determine the rest of it. But I think the labor economics, one could make a reasonable argument for making an argument for reinstituting the annual improvement factor. It started out at 5%. It at 4%, it went down to 3%. I wouldn't argue if it was 1% per year annual improvement factor, a wage increase. Just to get it back in the contract, give us a dime now and give us 1% a year going forward. You must get something to increase your basic fundamental wage. Now, I know there are some out there that will say, Danjan, you got to shut up about all that stuff. We got to give the two-tier guys the $28 an hour. I think that's unrealistic at this point. I would just be happy that they reinstituted the AIF, even at 1%, just to get it back in the contract and give everybody a 10-cent an hour raise just to get the notion of a pay raise. You haven't had one in 10 years. They don't have any intention of ever giving you a negotiated pay raise again. It'll be like the skilled trades used to be we had to negotiate a special skilled trade wage of $1 an hour increase because all the skilled trademen, when in my second term as a skilled trade committee man, were screaming and hollering that we were all getting so much COLA that the wage spread between production and skilled trades was shrinking to a dollar or less than a dollar. So they negotiated a special skilled trade pay raise of $1 an hour. Okay? But what I am saying, though, is that I don't think it's unreasonable to say give everybody a 10-cent an hour wage increase and reinstitute an annual improvement factor. And if King had any balls, he'd do it in perpetuity. If he can negotiate, what is it? Two-tier people go to a maximum of $19.42, and that's their wage for life. Isn't that the way that goes?
Something like that.
Well,
yep.
Let's put AIF back at 1% a year in perpetuity. I mean, it's the other side of that coin. And I don't think that's unreasonable, given the money these companies are making off of you guys right now. And they are making a bundle off of you. Look at your productivity. I mean, Jeff found an article I usually look at that shows, you know, wage increase on a bar on a graph. It shows productivity going straight up, and it shows wages just being flat. That's all money in the company's pockets off of your backs, not because they're making and selling great cars. Because every year you produce more wealth for them as individuals. And that's what the AIF is about. And that's the end of my bitch for this week. I think they should do that.
Only be fair.
Don't use that word, please.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Use any word but fair. That word belongs to Bob King. We'll put it on his tombstone.
When
he ever dies. The International Union president who advocated fairness for everybody but the workers in the plant. It makes me sick to have this guy yammering about fairness with Nissan workers and fair this for them and saying corporations should be charged with human rights violations, and here sits 123,000 workers at Ford, GM, and Chrysler. That word doesn't apply to you guys contractually any way, shape, or form in the 2011 agreement, in my opinion. And no fairness there. Now, anybody wants to argue that, I'd be happy to argue with them. Well, I don't mean violently, but I mean
sure.
In terms of the labor economics, in terms of the pure numbers. I'm not making an emotional pitch here.
Oh, I know you're not.
I'm saying the numbers are there to do this, and this is not unreasonable. What is the value of freezing your pension, Scott? How much
right.
are they going to save on you if you have to work, once you hit 30 years, and you got to work 6 years beyond that, not to mention there's been no increase in the basic pension rate.
Right.
All those are real dollars in General Motors books. People
sure.
don't understand that. That 1% and a dime an hour for everybody doesn't come near recovering any of that money.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Let alone COLA.
Yeah.
I mean, what? In February of 2009, you all lost 99 cents an hour. Gone. Ford, GM, and Chrysler, right across the board. Buck an hour. What's the roll
paycheck.
Up on that since in the last 3 years?
Yeah.
On a buck an hour. This is pure numbers I'm talking here.
Oh, you're right. Look at
you
it,
brought up the word fair. You never hear me using it.
My mistake. Hey, you know, you're right. You look at productivity. For last year, the United States, we were the most productive country again. We're the most productive people in the world.
But that's too general.
Well,
how many vehicles did General Motors make in 2012, and how many people?
Exactly.
How
like
many people did General Motors make in January with how many people? How
right.
many did they make in February with how many people?
And better yet, how many did how many vehicles did they make in, let's say, 1986 with over 100,000 people? And we're making more vehicles in 2012.
In 1986, you had 375,000 hourly workers in GM. It sounds almost unbelievable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How many vehicles did they make in 1986 with 375,000 people?
I would say probably close to 12 to 14 million.
GM
12,
alone?
13. Oh, no. GM
I'm talking
alone.
About GM. Just GM.
Oh. Well, he figured
Tom's,
this in.
Tom's got all those numbers.
Right.
We went through that when he was doing his dissertation.
Right.
And he talked, that was one of the central things that he talked about.
Right.
At the conference you were at with him when you guys were presenting, you know, he started in 79. He said we're almost 400,000 people,
yep,
making this many vehicles with a contract 176 pages long. Today we have 49,000 people and 756 pages in the contract.
Yep. And comparably making less money.
And back
money.
In those days, they were trying to make 10 million cars a year. In
right.
America,
right
in the 70s,
yeah,
and we've gone from they're looking at what did we do last year? 14.2 million.
Yeah,
I kept meaning to do that. Go back and find out how many total vehicles did GM make in 2012.
I don't know, but their goal for this year, I think, for the industry is 15 to 15.5 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but you got to go by company because you can break it down to manpower, people per vehicle.
Right.
I mean, you don't even need a dollar figure. You can just say, well, it took 3.7 people to build a vehicle in 2012. It took 2.9 to build them in 2013. That money is lost to you guys in the plant forever. That is increased wealth that you're producing. And then you, if you want to play labor economics, you can say, if Scott worked this many hours, how much overtime did he not get that he should have got? If Scott lost a dollar an hour in 2009, what if he was getting that 99 cents in 2012? How much would that have meant to him? There's a big number.
Yeah.
That's all real money that you guys... I'm talking chump change with a 10 cent an hour raise here and a 1% AIF. That's chump
yeah.
change. You guys are gave up money in great gory gobs. The projected money on your pensions, all that kind of stuff, and you're not getting anything for it but your profit sharing check.
Right. Interesting way to look at that, isn't it?
Hello.
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 Yeah, my phone went off. I grabbed another one, turned it on, and I guess I'm back on.
You're wired back on.
I never left, I guess. Whatever.
Took a trip and never left the farm.
Maybe I just pushed the button here. I don't know. But I'm still... So, well, anyhow, not to belabor the point, but this has really been troubling me, you know, that when does all this money... And that one of the Solstice websites said that in 2012, the savings by the Detroit automobile workers to the big three company was $11 billion. That's the amount of money you handed them collectively, $11
billion. Yeah.
You don't feel it because you guys are like the frog in the pot. You know, you put the frog in a pot of cold water and then turn the fire on high.
Right.
You don't feel what's happening to you. they narcotize you a little bit with profit-sharing checks, signing bonuses, drop a couple hundred bucks on you at Christmas time, and to quote my old friend Dave Yata, sprinkle the overtime in there so you don't really have to live on a 40-hour paycheck. That's all calculated out. It, you know, you're working these Saturdays, and we've talked about channel stuffing and all that other kind of stuff. But I just think it's time for some recovery here. I don't know how that plays out for two-tier people. I mean, that probably is the most despicable thing we ever did. Only the tier two is not the real problem. It's the flexible, the temporary, and the long-term temporary. What do you do with those human beings? What are they even doing in a UAW plant? Why aren't they, if they need them, make them tier two? Because a lot of people around the country think when a person gets hired in the GM as a flexible temp or long-term temp, they think those are tier two workers because they get the two-tier page. They don't understand that they're throwaway people.
Right.
Yeah, now that you mention that, a co-worker stopped me the other night and asked me if I read this month's issue of Solidarity Magazine. And I said, no, I usually throw that thing out. He told me to read it because there's an article in there about the Nissan Drive.
Yeah, right.
So I got online and I found it. And I can't link it to our Facebook page. But in the article, UAW is complaining about long-term, temporary, two-tier wages down on Nissan. And that just really floored me. So you guys get your copy of
That's not news. I mean, all the companies in America use them now.
Right.
Okay? They all use them.
Yeah, but the UAW is complaining because Nissan has them.
Right. The UAW is complaining that this is happening at Nissan, long-term, temporary.
Well, it's what I said. As far as Bob Kane's concerned, you guys don't even draw breath. He signed he got his contract signed. You guys are fine. And he's got you guys in a soundproof box.
Yes, he does.
And he never talks about what's going on in a Ford, GM, or Chrysler plants.
Correct.
He doesn't. And
no,
Joe Ashton and Jimmy Settles and Holifield, of course, Holifield is out there saying, well, you know, the national parties agreed to alternative work schedules, and that's my only comment. When the reporter called him up about the guy that was fired, and he says, you know, what's your feeling? The reporter didn't call to hear from General Holifield that the national parties negotiated that. He called to get his view about one of his people being overboard. Holifield don't even address that. Does not even address the event of the guy getting fired. He just says alternative work schedules have been agreed to by the national parties. They're good for the company, and it creates more jobs, and it helps the community. That was as much as he would say. Now, that would be fine if that was the President of the United States or a state senator. But he ultimately represents that guy in the Chrysler plant. He's responsible for the representation of all the Chrysler workers. He did not even acknowledge the guy was alive on the planet Earth. But getting back to temporaries, you know, I had these arguments with the folks at the other group, Jeff, when the contracts were first ratified. It isn't going to be about Tier 2. They're non-issue. It's about the temporaries. You know, what is it General Moore said? We got to get rid of all these classifications of people, okay? Starting at the bottom. In General Motors, we have flex workers, temporary workers, long-term temporary workers, tier two workers, and legacy workers. That's 5 classifications of workers. Hell, we did better than that down at Spring Hill. We never had any temporaries. We had mechanical techs, which were the tool room people. We had electrical techs. Those were skilled trades. And we have operating techs. We only had 3 classes of people at Spring Hill. We got 5 in General Motors now. We had 170-some pages in 1976. We got 750 pages now. We had 400,000 people in 1979. We got 50,000 people, but we need 4 times as many pages in a contract. And we've got 2 more classifications of people in a given GM plant than we had at Spring Hill. We only had 3. There were no temporary workers at Spring Hill. And nobody's paying attention to these 3 non-seniority acquiring groups of people. Nobody, they're like an invisible workforce, a permanent underclass of workers. And the horrible thing about this is they're in GM plants. They're in the plants headed of a union headed up by the rock star who runs around the world yammering about fairness and talking about charging corporations with human rights violations.
Yeah.
And all that exists as a result of him signing 3 agreements. There is so, we are so far away from. I mean, there were some of us back who were against Saturn in 1982 and 83. We were yammering against Saturn. I was on a shop committee. I would go to sub-councils and bitch and piss and moan about Saturn, say it was wrong. I was one of the guys that said, what are we doing negotiating a contract? There's nobody there to vote on it. That was child's play compared to what this guy did in 2011. Child's play.
Right.
Now, Dick, before we run out of time, Rico would like me to ask you, and now he works third shift at the truck plant. Have you heard anything on the Lordstown situation? He said he's heard from people that knows people in Lordstown. It is they're going to settle. I have no idea. I haven't heard anything about it. So
okay, we have put the public review board case on the Facebook site from Lordstown. We have put the court case. When the public review board turned these people down, they went to federal court, 6th District Court, and they started a lawsuit against the union, the local, and GM.
Right.
The judge. Now they lost the PRB case, and you got to read the decision on that if you want a good belly laugh. The judge said, no, this case is going forward. I told Scott some time ago, the case will never see the light of day. They can't afford it. That's why they converted all your temporaries to Tier 2 last year. They wanted to make sure there weren't any of these long-term temps that could have, after 120 days of backfill legacy openings. They wiped the slate clean in the whole corporation of long-term temps, all because of this lawsuit. Now this lawsuit goes to court, and the judge says it's going forward, and this case will never go to court. They will settle that case. My guess is that they'll make them whole. And without going into specifics of the case, because I know we're running out of time, but they were wrong in what they did to these people. They tried to cover it up with the UAW-controlled public review board. The judge says that world doesn't exist in my courtroom. Right and wrong exists here. This case is going forward. This case will never be held in open court because it will expose the underbelly of the UAW and the corporation, where the whole business of temps, it would have to be laid out on an operating table and dissected down to its smallest cell. General Motors and the UAW could not stand that. They could not tolerate it. So they will make a generous offer to these people. This is my opinion. They will make them whole. Nick Juan, who is at Auto Caravan, I don't believe is part of the lawsuit, but he was one of the people who wasn't involved in the circumstance. They, I think they will make them whole. They'll probably give them some pain and suffering money and get them to sign confidentiality agreements. They were so wrong in what they did to these people under the laws of the land. The arrogance of GM and the UAW and what happened to those people is almost unbelievable. But then again, so is funding your benefits with something that's an illegal prohibited activity in a federal law. But these people go and they twist it all around. But that's my guess. It's been very quiet about it. I've not seen anything. I have some ears on it. I think that they are going to want to settle this like it never happened. So they'll wait for a very dark, overcast day, and it's somewhere around midnight when nobody is looking, they'll probably settle it.
Yeah.
35 people, I think they'll give them, but General Motors is like that. They'll be grudging. They'll begrudge them every penny, every accommodation. I mean, they'll give it, but it'll be like pulling tooth. That's just the nature of General Motors. And that is the difference between GM and Ford. If Ford is wrong, they're wrong. They won't fight with you that much. General Motors is just that way. But Dan Akerson will go with 5-gallon buckets of caviar to Washington next week so he can get his hands on this new tax diversion that Obama's done for him.
Yeah, well, that's...
So, yeah, I would look probably the not-too-distant future. I didn't catch the guy's name, Don.
Rico.
Rico, I would look for that case, too. Be settled, because I just don't think that GM and the UAW could stand the light of day of a courtroom trial on temporary workers. It's just too messy. And as far as temporary workers, I don't know why we need temporary workers at all. Run your plant without them. If you're going to have Tier 2, have Tier 2. Bob King should step up and be a man and tell the corporations, we're just not having that anymore.
Better yet.
We need those people, make them all Tier 2 and get on with it.
Better yet, we're not going to have Tier 2. Let's all make them all equal employees.
Well, see, that would be the next step when this contract expires. I mean, I said to do some things now, but the thing of it is this, you're never going to get to that point unless the temporaries go away, Scott.
Right.
As long as they've got flexible, temporary, and long-term temporary, the Tier 2 has almost become a privileged class of the three temporary employee grades.
Yeah.
But I agree. But I think that Bob should end that. That's a hell of a way to have to live, being one of those three classifications. At least once you get your 90 days in as a Tier 2,
absolutely,
you're at least a regular worker in the plant. You're just not a, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, you're not a throwaway human being.
Right.
I think in terms of Bob King, who's yammering at Nissan about human rights, don't these three classifications fall into that human rights thing he's talking about at Nissan? I'll be damned if it doesn't.
Damn. Amazing. Well, we have about a minute left. And you should have your website up and running sometime this week when you do, Scott.
Hopefully. Yeah, I'm going to try.
Okay, well, if you do, come by and let us know. We'll make cards up.
Okay.
And we'll get that out. Where he made cards up, but that's minute now. That's, it ain't going to count now.
Keep in mind, the fact that it even gets out there and people can find it on the internet doesn't mean it's still not work in progress. There's a lot of work to do into what this thing is going to be.
Oh, I'm sure. I know. Yeah. I know all about that. So you're right.
I'll let you know.
All right.
I'll probably be happy, minus a few handfuls of hair, but I'll be happy.
I understand. I want to thank everybody for in the chat room. Old man, nice seeing you. And you always have some good questions. I wish you would call in and chat with us. I know you're from Indiana, and I think you're right. They're going to have tier two people in the They're going to get rid of us old people and offer tier two people a lot of, a little bonus to sign these contracts and mess everything
up. And go from 20% to 30% of temporary workers.
Right.
They'll just keep expanding that underclass.
Exactly.
Don't forget, the goal is that everybody is temporary, Don.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. You're absolutely right.
In the United States of America, with a union president who talks about human rights and fairness.
He's so amazing to me. You knew the man, and how was he when you knew him? I don't get him.
Well, keep in mind, he's one of these guys who was privileged in the UAW. His dad was a highly placed Ford labor relations guy. And he got into the Rouge plan and had that support to progress in union ranks. He wound up in an apprenticeship, an electrician's apprenticeship, and was an officer in a local union. And there were a lot of guys in the day who get these union jobs full-time and get apprentice credit for it. I don't know if Bob actually works 7,902 hours as an electrician apprentice or not. But his, given that management was always very supportive of him, he wound up, president of Local 600 and got involved out there in Region 1A with Buddy Battle, and you guys don't know who I'm talking about. This is a black guy that weighed about 400 pounds. He was a regional director, and he was like a potentate downriver there. And somebody convinced Buddy to support Bob King, and Bob King winds up regional director in Region 1A. And then they create a fifth vice presidency at Solidarity House. And the only responsibilities that go with that is organizing, and guess who gets it? Now, what did this guy do in his first term as a vice president? We had only one job. That was to organize. Not much.
That I know of.
And he sat there and sat there and without getting into those high-level politics and Steve Jokic and all that kind of stuff, Steve wasn't all that enamored of him, but he took him. And some way under Gettelfinger, he winds up being supported by Gettelfinger for president. And my guess is these companies let the international union know Steve Jokic wanted the GM department so bad when he first became vice president. He was telling people he was going to get GM. He didn't get GM. He got parts and one other thing. And And then he wanted GM, then Eflin got GM. And he had to follow Eflin. When Eflin got GM, he had to follow Eflin at Ford. They had to follow Eflin into GM. Because General Motors did not want him. And Owen Beaver accommodated that. Because you know how you become assigned to a department? The president just assigns you. You don't run for vice president of the GM department. I'm sure everybody knows that. Once they get elected vice president, the chair, the president of the union sits down and says, you get this, you get that, you get this. And Gelfinger, you know, gives him Ford. He becomes the heir apparent. He's obviously got the full support of all the companies because they know he is, how does he describe himself? A cooperative relationship building union guy with companies.
Who's fair?
Who's fair? Who has an interest in making the companies competitive. Hell, let us pay for your campaign cards. But he winds up as president. And then who knows who's going to be next? Who knows? But now the union is so changed, what's going on in the plants. I mean, we just don't have an adversarial relationship. Not quietly, overtly. Look what General Holifield did when a reporter called him up. You know, one of you guys got fired. And I'm sure Bryce Hoffman knows enough about us. We said, for engaging the media and speaking, saying something against the company, he's not on the clock. And all Holifield will say is, well, we support the alternative work schedule. It's good for the plants. It's good for the company. It creates jobs and puts money in the community. That was all Holifield would say to him. That's every one of them down there. There's no indignance here about why this person was fired or how he's being represented. And the guy himself apparently has had a conversation with the chairman, and he's gone silent and has asked everybody else to be quiet about what's happened.
Right.
Wow.
But as an old war horse union guy, what shop rule did he violate? What part of the contract did he create an infraction of? What does it mean, engaging the media, making statements that are not consistent with the interests of the corporation? Yet here we are, and, you know, we're going into 3 weeks with it now. And
yep.
So everybody's enjoying a school of learned helplessness now. Everybody. But they are setting a precedent here with this case. And they are grinding a lot of axes on the wheel of this case. They are sending the message out to Ford, GM, and Chrysler. And somebody told me about something that happened in a GM plant. But they are sending the message out about Ford, GM, and Chrysler. It's the message of absolute terrorism. Absolute. Now, I'm talking about somebody who's goes way back, and the people in the plant are just going to assume, well, don't say anything to the media. Don't say anything bad about General Motors. That message has already been out there these 2 weeks. And don't you think for a minute that the industrial relations people in GM and the industrial relations people at Ford are not aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
And my guess is Ford will be the least of the three in promulgating this message. I think Ford management, and Jeff can correct me if I'm wrong, has just backed away from this thing.
Yes, they have.
They're not interested in playing stupid games. They're interested in building cars. So anyhow, that's just my nickel's worth on that. It's just a whole different, it's so different that you've got the demographics in the plant. You've got people who know that three classes of people in the plant who would be put out of the plant for next to nothing at the drop of a hat. So you've got good fertile soil to do terrorism.
Absolutely. All right, man.
All right. Okay.
Well, 9:10 at night.
Yeah, and some of
we all got to go Betty by now.
Well, some of you guys that get up early in the morning do.
Yeah.
I gotta go to the eye doctor's tomorrow morning. So
hope you can see your way there.
Well, I don't have to be there till 10, but
okay.
I know I have to leave the house tomorrow in the morning. So, but I get up early anyhow.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen.
Everybody.
Also, I'll say good night to everybody. Everybody have a peaceful night's sleep. I'm going to try and do that.
All right. Jeff, Dick, Scott, thank you, as always, for all the information. And we'll see you next Sunday or talk to you next Sunday night.
And all of you out there, send us emails. Give us something to talk about. Tell us something. I know it's hard. Say you're from Germany and you're calling about an Opel plant, or you work at a gear plant in Barcelona, Spain, or somewhere. But if you got a question, ask it. You know, you don't have to say you're from a plant in Texas or Kansas City if you don't want to. Just say, look, I worked in an auto plant somewhere on the planet Earth, and here's my question.
There you go.
Excellent.
Very good.
All right, gentlemen, have a good night.
You
too. And I'll be in touch with all you guys, I'm sure, hopefully by the midweek, I'm hoping.
Okay, guys, good night.
Good night. Good night, Jeff.
All right, night.
Night, Dick. Scott.
Night.